Welcome back. You're watching Stock Watch with me, Bright Khumalo. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are independent analysts Chris Gilmore and Thamsa Nganeta from Shiloh Capital. Send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag StockWatch. Good evening, gentlemen. Welcome to the show. I'll start with you, Chris Gilmore. Can you give us a sort of a market wrap today? I saw we had a great, well, an interesting start to the day, and we sort of sagged towards the end. The only companies in the green were sort of your PGMs on, you know, the platinum price holding up.
Yeah, right. I think it's a continuation of this rather sad situation where we're going nowhere slowly. I mean, we're about 8% off the peak in March, yeah. And there's nothing really to drive it, if you think about it. All the excitement, you know, that used to be in the market with the Chinese stocks, that's all evaporated. You know, Naspers and Tencent and stuff like that. I mean, that's all gone.
Yeah.
And then commodities, as you rightly say, look, that can be interesting. But, you know, if the world is going to be facing down recession at some point in time, and we just don't know yet what exactly how it's going to pan out. So there's a lot of nervousness and caution about that. But as far as our market's concerned, going nowhere slowly, and I think it's going to be slugging it out for the remainder of the year unless something drastic happens.
Yeah, like we don't have a shortage of drastic things that have happened in 2022 already. Samsung, let's jump into U.S. markets and, you know, how we're opening there. I mean, if you know, I can do a quick recap. Last week, we're up 6% on the S&P 500. Big week to actually help us end flat, you know, when all is said and done for the month of May. But, you know, on the first day of, Monday was closed for Memorial Day. On the first day of June, we sort of, you know, had a great day. We gave up all of those gains yesterday. So where are we sitting now?
Yeah, look, I think volatility is the name of the game of late.
Yep.
The Fed price adjustments, the foreign currency adjustments,
yep.
They all lead to one fundamental point, volatility. If you just look at the VIX and the change in that, you recognize that we're now risk off. People are moving towards safer assets. They are revaluing assets appropriately, especially on the tech stock side. And I think in future, we're going to continue to see a move towards growth in the bond side with interest rates going up. So people rebalancing their portfolios and a revaluation of a lot of stocks given the new interest rates rise.
Yeah, look, someone asked about, you know, the 60-40 portfolio and said there's been a, you know, a big sell-off of bonds and then there's been a big sell-off of equities. So who is actually making money? So maybe that's a question for another day. Let's jump into our question for
maybe
today.
Maybe crypto.
That doesn't look good either. this is a question from Temba Zamla who says, good day, is there any future for Ascendis? Chris?
The short answer is no. I mean, I've been following this thing. I haven't followed it for a while now. I remember when it first came out, when Carsten Vellner was punting the thing remorselessly. And, you know, there's some good companies in there, but really it's exhausted the patience of most punters out there now. And frankly, I'm the wrong person to speak to because I'm very, very cynical about the whole thing.
Yeah, and Thamsang, do you have any differing views?
No, I'm the same. There won't be any. It's a simple case of great businesses bought at high leverage. And yeah. At the end of the day, leverage will destroy everything if it's in that manner. So I think as a business, I don't see them going forward. I think they're going to become a shell initially, and they're going to be bought off maybe by some other company trying to reverse list or something of the sort. But as a medical business, I think they used too much leverage and tried to do too much with the shares, too much financial engineering destroying good businesses.
Yeah, look, the story does not end well there, unfortunately. This is actually a good question because I saw this also, you know, everyone asking about it on Twitter. It says, when will my BHP when will BHP shareholders receive the Woodside cash dividend? Because, you know, obviously the South African shareholders because Woodside can't be listed here, and the JSE did very little to lobby for Woodside to have a secondary listing here. They're going to get cash, you know, through a book build. So when is that happening? Samsung?
It's unlikely to ever happen. I think there are too many constraints for it to occur. Unless the JSE, National Treasury, South African Reserve Bank come together to find a solution, and that is largely going to be caused by lobbying, especially on the JSE side, it's unlikely to happen. I think it's also somewhat of an indictment on how we treat our companies, especially our natural resources business. If you look at the ASX, the TSX, and the LSE, and see how they treat businesses, how they treat their natural resource companies, I think that level of innovation is required by the JSE. We've got to recognize that if our natural resource businesses have to go offshore to list, we've got a fundamental problem. So I think it's unlikely that they're going to receive anything from that in terms of listing and shares.
Yeah. Woodside, are you following, you know, that transaction very closely, Chris?
No. Woodside Petroleum, I mean, it's only the people outside of South Africa that are going to be able to participate in that, the spin-off there. So, no, I have followed it.
Yeah, because basically what's happening there is BHP is, you know, taking their petroleum assets and putting them into Woodside, and obviously in exchange for shares, etc. And it's a rather intimate transaction. But anyways, this is a very good question. I don't know if you guys follow any of these BE shares. It's asking about the Sol B1s, which this person says, I noticed that the BE Sasol shares are either seriously up or seriously down with thin volumes. I assume that these shares are exclusively held by BE participants. In my understanding, I think everyone can buy them because they already got the underlying, you know, BE underneath. So the reason why they're listed is that everyone can buy Sol B1. So, and in their discount entry to the original, you know, ordinary Sasol shares. So I stand to be corrected there. So is there a reason for this thing to you know, on thin volume, basically, you know, be up a lot or down a lot, Tamsan?
Yeah, so BE shares, like most sort of structured finance shares, have liquidity issues. If you can buy the real underlying, why would you then buy the BE shares?
Because there's a discount. Because there's a massive discount.
But the discount is not available to everyone, right? And that's why they are structured the way they are. The discount is available to a select few of shareholders who can sell and buy at a particular stage, right? And also, if I'm selling, there has to be another previously disadvantaged individual who's willing to buy. And so liquidity is the largest problem that listed BE shares have. I think the value is undeniable, but there's only a small pool of buyers and there's a small pool of sellers. So the transaction will always, always be murky. And secondly, it's a derivative in essence. I don't get to hold the actual underlying. I get to hold a subset of the underlying. So that also leads to liquidity issues. So if you have the liquidity, you might prefer to buy the actual underlying so that you can actually buy and sell. You can exit when you want. You can enter when you want. Whereas with the BE shares, there's liquidity, deep liquidity concerns.
Yeah, this one is another one on the SMS line, which says, I'm looking to get into Palantir as my big data play. Good idea, or should I stick with the big boys in the game, Microsoft, IBM, etc.? Comrades Coco?
Which one was that? Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Palantir.
How do you spell it?
That's the point. It's not as important as, you know, Microsoft.
Yeah, Peter Thiel.
it's one of Peter Thiel's, you know, yeah. It's basically...
No, I don't know this.
Yeah, it's basically a security, you know, like a cloud security business or, you know, those type.
Don't know it.
Yeah. Samsung, any thoughts?
Look, I think you've got to be quite objective when you enter a sector or a space. You've got to look at what potential clients Palantir can get based on their vertical. And if you look at where Amazon, Google, Microsoft are, they've got a much stronger offering. They are competing for much bigger clients, and they are able to offer a broad set of products in addition to just data. So I think a broader review is better. As a stockholder, diversification matters. So when you own Amazon for the sake of AWS, for example, you'll get the rest of the package, Prime and the rest, right? That diversification of earnings sort of balances out your portfolio. I think a direct investment betting on one provider to be able to capture a market or a part of the market against very large consumers and very large competitors, I don't know if there is growth and if there's sustainable return going forward there.
Yeah, I mean, also Palantir is down close to 80% since, you know, its all-time highs. So maybe that's why we're getting these questions. People are like, you know, searching for opportunity. Jonathan Governor says...
Not all stock falls are value.
Yeah, exactly. Can the panel explain how Rebosis is trading so cheap? Am I missing something or there's no hope for the property sector? Chris?
I'm not having a good evening this evening. I don't follow any of these. I'm sorry. Major hospital pass again.
No. Just speak about the property sector in general. You can't just like run away from property.
Yeah, look,
I'm
very negative about the property sector.
Why?
Because for a variety of reasons. Not the least of which is because of what has happened since the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, whichever sector you look in property, whether it's retail, whether it's residential, not so much residential, but whether it's commercial, you're seeing this flight away from the actual office space. You're seeing the flight away from retail. And so many of these property companies, they're having to reinvent themselves. And, you know, the degree to which they can reinvent themselves is going to determine their future.
Is it cheap for a reason? What's going on here? And just expand a little bit more about the shakeup I was talking about.
Hello?
Yes, Tom?
Yes, it's not necessarily cheap. I think it's found some value given the management shakeup. They've got good assets, or two really good assets on the portfolio. So I think it's now a matter of whether or not we trust that the management will come back and perform. I think if you have confidence in the management, it's a great buy. If you don't, I think then walk away. Our view is I think we trust the management. We think they can continue to deliver value, and we'll continue to hold on to them going forward.
Okay, I like those thoughts on Rebosis because they, you know, they're not what you hear daily. Okay, this is not a question. Okay, we have a question from Marcelo Martini, who's got two questions really about, you know, the long-term prospects of Calgary M3 and Invicta. So, Comrades Coco, do you follow Invicta, you know, closely?
Not really. I'm really not having a good evening this evening.
Calgary
M3, I mean, the results came out the other day, and yes. They were really very good. So look, I mean, it's a difficult company to really get your mind around properly. You know, they haven't been too successful on the sort of government housing type of things, but Memorial Park side has been actually very, very good. Great management, young management. I like the guys there. They got a fascinating shareholder base. So look, I think Calgary M3 are actually going places. I actually quite like the look of it. I don't follow it that closely.
Yeah, and the share price is sort of, you know, it's not where it used to be. So maybe there might be value there if something special happens. And, you know, like you said, management is strong and they're always selling the company very, very, very hard. Hopefully they can deliver on that big sell. Do you have any thoughts on Calgary M3 or Invicta, Tamsang?
Yeah, I think they should be private. I think that's a business that should be private. They'll be able to focus and build up their portfolio properly. I think half the problem they have is they have to report to us. Right. So I think if they're a private business and they are able to go about developing their projects and their properties, servicing the low income housing market, I think they can go far. There's plenty of scope in that market, whether you look at township, whether you look at RDB houses or whatever other sort of low income offering they provide. My view is that the major problem they face is they have to be talking to investors every half. They have to continue to give us results that find us happy or make us happy. And part of that takes away from the core business that they, I think they are capable of doing. So our view is that business should be private. They should be allowed to go about the business of building properties for the low income housing market. And when they've done that at scale, they can come back to the market.
Yeah, I think that was the dream. And obviously, they would get that, you know, those tax benefits of, you know, building affordable housing. But it hasn't really, like, played out according to, you know, the Black Book. So I don't know, man. And you know, with regards to demand, for example, for, you know, low-income housing, it's not exactly been where the market is buoyant. It's mostly, you know, suburbia here in Joburg, not in the outskirts. So it's not easy. Yeah, Tom.
Well, I think there's some participation happening there. So Itala is working on providing financing solutions for that, which are not high interest, or providing sort of a guarantee to enable some form of market entry. So I think there are solutions there, and I think the market is large enough to provide those solutions.
Yeah.
I just think if you're a listed company, you have limitations in how you can go about executing when most of the time you have to be giving us returns.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, I get being a listed company comes with its own headaches, to say the least. This one is from Teboho Masilwa, who says, may I get the panel's view on capital appreciation? I mean, it's obvious, you know, everyone's going to start asking about capital appreciation because they seem to be bucking the trend for the most part. Chris?
Yeah, great little fintech company run by Bradley Sachs. And, you know, it's got quite a lot of moving parts to it. And it, you know, it complements what a lot of the banks are actually doing. So they've made themselves in many ways invaluable in the actual banking industry. So I actually like it. They're highly entrepreneurial. It's a good little company.
Yeah, and Tabsanga, any?
Yeah, we have to confess that we're a shareholder, so our views may be biased, but we view them as a listed VC for fintech firms. They understand the business. They understand how to enter into some of these firms, because half the problem of extracting value from ventures or smaller technology companies is how you enter and how you execute your shareholding. They understand it. They understand it well. They understand the demand side of financial services and how to address it with which businesses they enter into. So I think they've got a long future going forward. However, I think over time, as the businesses grow, they're going to face similar problems to Naspers, to Process, to Berkshire, to PSG. So how they deal with a great portfolio, but a huge NAV gap over time is going to be a key concern for shareholders going forward.
Okay, fantastic. Capital appreciation is going to be an interesting one to watch. I'm not sure if they've fixed their management fee issue that, you know, that was overhanging the share price for a very long time. And once, you know, if that's fixed, because now they're an operating entity, it should, you know, everything should come together nicely. Two companies. This is from Pat. It's MMI and Signia. Who wants to take MMI? Who wants to take Signia? Chris?
Signia.
Okay, yeah. Take Signia, Chris.
I think yep, honoring my elders took the blow there from me, but I think MMI is not it's not I'm not, it's a big business, but it's not a great business. So I think you've got to see it as a bond. It'll give you great dividends over time. You'll continue to earn, but it's not going to be one that you buy for share appreciation or for growth.
And why is that?
I think it's because of the nature of insurance or the nature of their insurance or their products. They're not innovative products. They don't bring about growth. So if you compare, for example, Discovery has Vitality as the bank. They've got innovative products they can make additional margins from. MMI can't do that because they sell the basic product. So in essence, they're listed F-bomb. And I think we've got to acknowledge that they're a typical bond. It's basically long South Africa insurance, and you're going to make your dividends and your interest payments. You're going to make money from interest payments and dividends, but there's no real capital growth. And the concern is if those payments don't beat inflation meaningfully, you may not want to own the share.
Yeah, interesting. And obviously they've got a thriving asset management business there as well. Signia, Comrades Cocoa?
Yeah, it's, you know, this is Magda Vasitska's company, and I mean, it's been phenomenally successful over the over a relatively recent, a relatively short period of time. You know, it tends to concentrate in passive investment. They've got terrific knowledge of markets and what drives markets. And you mentioned innovation. They're very innovative. They've got a zero fee money market. Things like that, you know. So there's a lot going on there, and they're always ahead of the pack. I mean, their fourth industrial revolution funds, this type of thing. They really know what they're up to. So I've got a lot of time for Signia.
Okay, I like that. I'll ask one more question. No, you know what? Let's go to our stock picks for the evening. Actually, it's fine. I don't have to go to one more. Unless if you, Samsung, want to speak further on Signia, and then we can call it.
Yeah, look, I'm with Chris. I think the difference between them and MMI is the innovation, and they've followed similar to a path. I'm not sure who started who first, but to ARK Invest in the US by offering people access to a bunch of innovative products that weren't in existence, and charging very, very low margins for that. So they're able to bring in a huge asset base which didn't exist previously. And you've got to credit them for that. They've really worked hard to ensure that the average consumer in South Africa, the average investor, can passively invest in very innovative opportunities.
I don't know anyone at Signia would want to be compared to ARK, because their asset management, their being Signia, if we're being clear here, is growing. I don't know about ARK. I'm not gonna say anything further before I get banned from coming to studio here. I'll start with you, Comrades Cocoa. Pick for evening.
Okay, I'm going for ITA. It's an ETF. It's a U.S. defense and aerospace ETF.
Yeah.
Contains about 30 companies in there, the likes of Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, this type of thing. My view is very simple. This war in Ukraine has degenerated into a proxy war between the U.S. and Russia, effectively. And it's going to be around for a long time. It's going to be a nasty, grinding war. So if you don't mind getting involved, and it's terribly politically incorrect, but if you don't mind getting involved in arms dealing, basically, and that's what a lot of these companies do, then I think at some point in time we're going to see real value being extracted from this ETF.
So ITA, I like that for some reason. Yep. I don't know why. Tom Seidner, your pick for the evening.
Same thesis as Chris, but different approach. With TC Energy, the transcontinental pipeline, gas and oil pipeline company from Canada throughout the US all the way to Mexico. I think this issue with Russia and the US is eventually going to force domestic production to scale up on that side of the world. And the volumes through the pipelines that they own are going to drive profits. So instead of looking at the commodity itself, I think the infrastructure side, where it's almost a toll, where they're going to have to pump more, produce more, sell more domestically, and move that oil and gas throughout the U.S. Right now it's summer there, but they're going to go into winter soon, and oil and gas demand is going to start going up, especially at these prices. So we are looking at TC Energy. We believe they're the infrastructure that will distribute the energy required in that part of the world, and I think they'll do well.
So I like that. So Tom Sagna is going with TC Energy, and Comrades Cocoa is going with, you know, green ballistic missiles, by betting on ITA. I like that. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thanks to my guests, independent analyst Chris Gilmore and Tom Sagna Netta from Shiloh Capital. Join Zinati for the Friday edition of Stockwatch. That's tomorrow at 19:30. Have a good evening.